Okay, then we are going to start the Sutta teaching session. As you all know, on every Wednesday on Sri Lanka time at around 7 a.m., we are going to discuss a particular sutta. And we actually have started 2 weeks ago, and today also another session we are going to start. So we'll start with paying homage to the Buddha. නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Actually, in this session I have taken a sutta called Sabbasava Sutta. So this is what I am going to show you. So this Sabbasava Sutta is actually available in Majjhima Nikaya. Hope you all can see the screen. So in this sutta, Buddha talks about three main types of taints or influxes. In Pali, we call them asava. So there are three main categories he mentioned here: a kamasava, that is the sensual desire; then bhavasava, the desire to become, desire to being; and then avijjasava, that is the ignorance. In certain other suttas, dittasava is also mentioned. Actually, dittasava can be considered in under the ignorance, under the avijjasava. So we were going through this sutta and almost covered the very first method. Actually, in this sutta, Buddha comes up with seven strategies to handle these asavas. So those seven strategies are the way of handling asavas using seeing or having a proper understanding. Having yonisomanasikara, the wise reflection, so that covers number one. Then by restraining, and that is what actually I hope to cover today. And again by using wisely, not just abandoning everything, but whenever we have to use something, how to use it without making any taints, without strengthening any taints. So that is the another strategy. And enduring, patience. That is the number four. And then how to abandon asava by avoiding, not going to that direction, not associating. So that is the parivajjanapahatabba. And then vinodanapahatabba, that is where without keeping any sort of a defilement in the mind, what are the ways and means to remove it from the mind. So that is number six. And number seven is by developing the mind, that is bhavanapahatabba, basically covers the development of the bodhicittas. So we were going through related to the typical say blind putajjana, that what we sometimes call as andha putajjana, Asutava Putujjana, who doesn't have any idea about the Dhamma, who didn't associate any wise people, who haven't heard Buddha's teaching. So likewise, various shortcomings are there in his sight. So as a result, he doesn't know what to reflect, what to think, and as a result, he thinks what is not benefit for him, unfit for his reflection, he is thinking, because he hasn't have any idea about what are the necessary things to think. On the other hand, he may be thinking something harmful to him because he don't know they are really harmful. As a result, unarisen taints arise and arisen taint increases. So this is a kind of a drawback he is facing. As a result, his asavas are increasing, his taints are increasing. Now, on the other hand, now as a result, we discuss in this section he is thinking in an entirely wrong way by attributing the whole process to a self, to a person, to a I. So as a result, he is thinking wrongly related to the past, and he is thinking wrongly related to the future, as well as related to the present. So as a result of this wrong way of thinking, he is end up with the wrong view, michaditti. And Buddha says there are six main types of michaditti he might come across, and it's a kind of a thicket of views, kind of wilderness of views. It's a complete twist of views. And he couldn't get a proper decision, and he's very much like overwhelmed by various wrong way of thinking, wrong views. And then we discussed Sutava Arya Savaka, where he knows what to think and he knows wise reflection. He has actually associated good people, wise people, noble people. He has heard Buddha's teaching. So he know therefore what to think. And on the other hand, he know what is unfit for thinking. So as a result, he is thinking what is good for thinking and what is beneficial for him. And he does not think or does not attend to things which are unfit for attention. Now as a result, he has benefits. That is, unarisen taints does not arise, and arisen taints are abandoned. So you can see here in this, the very first method, Buddha particularly mentioned about the way of thinking. So we have to be very careful on what we are thinking, otherwise the way of thinking ultimately can lead to various wrong views, and again we get entangled. And in this sutta, Buddha mentions what is fit for thinking, that is wise reflection. He is given more prominence for Four Noble Truths. So there are various other methods also he has mentioned in various other suttas. In this particular sutta, in this Sabbasava Sutta, he has given prominence for Noble Truths. So last day we discussed that also. So what is Dukkha and the cause of Dukkha, and then the cessation of Dukkha and the path leading to the cessation of Dukkha. On last time, actually, I have emphasized knowing these four truths and sort of memorizing it and knowing each aspect of it is not the real goal or not the real objective, but rather applying it then and there to our mind is the most important part. Because as you know, this is kind of a recipe that we have to practically apply to our day-to-day activities and day-to-day experiences. Say for example, if you come across a certain person and at that time if you feel some sort of a resistance in your mind, so at that very moment you have to reflect what is really going on in the mind. So you have to step back and be mindful and be aware of that suffering. So therefore the idea here is there is dukkha. It is not my dukkha or why I am suffering, why poor me, why everything happens to me. That kind of I-centered or self-centered thinking is extremely harmful. But here the way of thinking is simply kind of a reflection. It is, we can't say simply it's a thinking. It is rather a way of reflection, so a kind of an understanding where you simply understand, okay, there is sort of an unsatisfaction in the mind, there is resistance in the mind, there is kind of sort of a hate arise in the mind, there is sort of irritation arise in the mind. So likewise, we have to see that unsatisfactoriness objectively. It is not you or it is not mine, it is not yourself, rather it is simply objectively you look at it and this is suffering, this is resistance, this is irritation, this is unsatisfactoriness, this is anger, this is jealousy. Likewise, then and there, whenever you come across various types of defilements, various types of unsatisfactoriness, various levels of uneasy, uncomfortable situation, you have to recognize that. Once you fully recognize that, it will lead to the understanding of the cause. That is number two, where you recognize the cause, and most probably it is the tanha, that is the craving. So Buddha mentions three types of craving, that is kama tanha, bhava tanha, vibhava tanha, the sensual desire, then desire to become and desire to get rid of. So once you understood any of these desires are present at that moment, the recipe here is pahatabbang, where you need to relinquish it, where you need to let go of that. So once that desire has been let go of, then you come across the cessation of the dukkha. So the previous suffering, previous resistance, unsatisfactoriness, irritation has gone. Now kind of a peace is available, mind comes back to the peace, and there is no presence of the dukkha, and so therefore that free moment or that released moment or that freedom, that cessation of dukkha has to be recognized, has to be realized. It is not that we have to search for a greater pleasurable feeling by neglecting this kind of a peaceful feeling. Rather, we have to admit now there is a peaceful feeling. It has happened because of the letting go of the desire, unsatisfactoriness, and suffering. Suffering has basically ceased. It has disappeared. Now sort of a peace is available. So we need to recognize this peace, and we have to realize this peace, and we have to give some value to this peace. So this kind of a peaceful feeling appear like little boring, because there are no much activities involved. Rather, kind of a boring kind of a situation, because mind is with less activities now. Mind is with any less agitation now. So the mind is in a peaceful situation. So we need to admire this peace. We need to admire this peaceful state of the mind. So more and more you recognize the value of that. So then you will recognize it is the most, or on the other hand, this is the least frictional path. This is the middle path. So this way of practice is we have to maximize. And again and again we have to apply this recipe. Again and again we have to recognize the suffering, recognize the unsatisfactoriness. As a result, we need to understand the cause of suffering, and that cause has to be let go of. Then the peace arises, and that peace has to be admired, that peace has to be recognized, and this practice has to be applied again and again. So it becomes a kind of a path. This path has to be repetitively applied in our experiences. So then it becomes a path. That is the fourth noble truth. It has to be bhave tabbang. We have to develop that path. So if one develops that path, then Buddha promised these three fetters will be abandoned. So number one, personality view, that is Sakkaya Ditti. Then the doubt, Vichikiccha. Then adherence to various rules and observances, Silabbata Paramasa. So this also we discussed last time. So they are the three main fetters. So this is something, a relationship I am trying to show you between the 10 fetters and the 4 asavas. So this is kind of an approximate relationship. Don't take it too seriously. This is a kind of an approximate relationship between the asavas and the samyojanas. Samyojana typically mean that we being bound to, sort of binding effects. So self-identity view, Sakkaya Ditti, spiritual doubt, Vichikiccha, attachment to rituals and vows, this Silabbata Paramasa. So these three are the fetters which Buddha mentioned, that once we apply the Dasana Pahatabba properly, we can overcome. And there are two more available, sensual lust and repulsion, Kamaraga and Patiga. So those are actually being diluted at the first stage. So complete eradication of Kamaraga and Patiga actually happens at the third stage of sainthood, sometimes we call as anagami. So only an anagami person, non-returner, is free from sensual lust and repulsion, sensual lust, kamaraga and patiga. So these five fetters are called lower fetters, or in Pali they are called orambhagiya sangyojana. These lower five fetters are completely eradicated in an anagami, in a non-returner, and three are actually eradicated in a sotapanna, and in sakadagami stage, the sensual lust and repulsion are diluted, not eradicated but diluted, and only in anagami stage all five are eradicated. And you can see the relationship. The first three are very much related to the dithasava, the influx of views. And of course, we can understand it has a big relationship with the ignorance as well. Because if there is no ignorance, you may not have identity view, self view. But here, the picture only given the sort of the prominence or the most prominent information is indicated, but of course you need to understand all these all these fetters have a relationship with influx of ignorance. But anyway, in this representation we are highlighting only the prominent part. So the first three therefore has a relationship with the influx of views, and number two, this influx of sense desire is fairly related with these two fetters, Kamaraga and Patiga. And the last five fetters, sometimes we call as higher fetters, can only be eradicated by the Arahant, so he is free from these five fetters as well. That is Ruparaga, Aruparaga, that is the sort of subtle desire for form existence, Rupaloka, and subtle desire for formless existence, Aruparaga, and then conceit, mana, restlessness, Uddaccha, and ignorance, avijja. So these five are very subtle fetters, and they have a relationship with the bhavasava and avijjasava. So this is what I am trying to explain here. So in this Sabbasava Sutta, in Dasana Pahatabha, Buddha says, if one properly practice Dasana Pahatabha, the way of seeing fetters, or the way of seeing influxes, properly recognizing them and going to the source, not just staying at the surface level, rather going to the source, going to the root, that is the wise reflection, helps us to overcome the first three fetters, and then one becomes the sotapanna. And last time someone actually asked what other methods are available to overcome the fetters and the asavas, and there are many techniques Buddha has mentioned. So in this sutta, the Four Noble Truths are given the prominence in the Dasana Pahatabha, and there are various other methods like practice of Satipatthana, and then the practice of Iddipada, practice of Indriya. So these are actually, we can summarize as 37 Bodhipakkhiya Dhamma, or for Satipatthana, for Iddipada, for Sammapadhana, and then five Indriya, five Bala, seven Bojjhanga, and Noble Eightfold Path. Altogether, there are 37 Bodhipakkhiya Dhammas, and whole practice is very much focused or oriented to develop these Bodhipakkhiya Dhammas, or the causes, or the conditioning causes for the wisdom. So different techniques are mentioned in Dhamma to develop these Bodhipakkhiya Dhammas, and therefore development of the Anapanasati, so that is in 16 steps as mentioned in various suttas like Anapanasati Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya, and then the development of Four Noble Truths as we just discussed, and Noble Eightfold Path, that is also very much the same, and then seeing the impermanence, seeing the non-self. And these are all different strategies Buddha has mentioned in various suttas. And so therefore it is, we need to understand that there are various meditation techniques which are focusing different aspects, different strategies. So we should not necessary to sort of condemn other methods, but there are many other methods also available. We may be giving prominence to one method, that's fine, but various other methods are also available. Now this is the end of first method, first strategy, Dasana Pahatabba. Now today we can talk about taints that should be abandoned by restraining. Asava Sangvara Pahatabba. So as you know, Sangvara means restrainment. So if we have sort of an asangvara, non-restrained attitude, then it is very difficult to travel the path, because our defilements become more and more, taints become more and more when we are not restraining. So therefore, as the second strategy to overcome defilements, overcome influxes, Buddha recommends Sangvara Pahatabba. One needs to restrain oneself. So there are actually the six faculties are mentioned. That is where the eye faculty has to be restrained. We should be aware of what we are seeing. For what purpose are we using our eyes? Say for example, if you are constantly looking at movies, constantly watching various harmful views, sort of where different sites are there, different films and movies are there, just to arouse various desires in our mind and just to arouse restlessness in the mind. And if we are continuously watching them throughout the day, then it's very difficult to purify the mind. Instead, our mind get more and more corrupted. So as a result, Buddha recommends that one needs to restrain the eye. We should be aware for what purpose that we are using eyes. So here Buddha mentioned if someone is using eye properly with a restrainment, then there's less possibility of arising influxes or strengthening influxes just because of the eye, because he know what are the proper way of using the eye. He know for what purpose one has to use the eye, so he is properly using it, not misusing it. And as a result, the influxes which can be caused, which can be triggered using the forms, using the visuals, are not getting chance to arise because he is restraining his eye. And similarly, one has to restrain ears. So there are various songs to hear, there are various musics to hear, some people are talking, there are various lectures to hear. So different things are available to hear. But we need to be selective on what we are going to hear. Otherwise, if we simply hear this and that, so it can ultimately sort of give various triggering effect to the mind. So as a result, we start to think differently, think in a wrong way, and ultimately the unarisen influxes may arise and the arisen influxes may get stronger. So therefore we have to be careful on what we are going to hear. Actually, as human beings, we are gifted with these faculties: eyes, ears, nose, tongue, the body and the mind. So all these are very useful faculties. But on the other hand, if we misuse them, and if we don't know how to properly use them, then we will be in a big trouble. So here in this section, therefore Buddha recommends to use these faculties with restrainment. Similarly, for the nose, So there may be various fragrances available. So are we going to stimulate our nose again and again by those fragrances, or are we simply using it properly? So this is something we need to reflect. This is something we need to consider, because these faculties may lead to arising of defilements. And number four, the restrainment of the tongue. Nowadays there are various dishes are available, delicious foods are available, and if we don't restrain the tongue, then we ultimately get end up with various diseases. And on the other hand, at that consuming state, we may strengthen various defilements as well. So therefore, Buddha recommends to restrain the tongue. And restrainment of the body. There may be various luxurious contacts are available, but we need to know our limit. We need to know the repercussions. And as a result, we have to restrain the body. And most importantly, we need to restrain the mind. So different kinds of wholesome thoughts can arise in the mind. Unwholesome thoughts arise in the mind. So we have to be very vigilant on what are we encouraging. Are we encouraging various defilements in the mind? Or are we encouraging wholesome states in the mind? So therefore, we need to restrain the mind as well. So this is what Buddha emphasized in Sangvara Pahatabba. Just by restraining one's faculties, one would be able to fairly calm down the influxes, because influxes are not getting chance to trigger, not getting chance to come up, not getting chance to activate. Then we can move to number three, taints that should be abandoned by using wisely. So in this section, actually, Buddha mentioned particularly that we as human beings, we can't live without food. We can't live without clothing. And we can't live without medicine. So likewise, there are various requisites we have to use. So these requisites we have to wisely use. So this is the most important aspect here we need to recognize. So Buddha doesn't advocate any kind of, Buddha's period, there are various other ascetics who actually recommend even not using clothes and not eating. And likewise, there are various wrong ways were used even during the Buddha's time. But at this situation, Buddha recommends us that we need to reflect wisely when we are using these different requisites. So he starts with reflecting wisely, using robes or using clothes. For lay people, there are various clothes. And are we using clothes to simply to show off, simply to attract others? Or are we using clothes for proper intention? So Buddha sort of explains what are the proper use. Say basically, we are using various clothes to protect ourselves from cold, maybe protect ourselves from heat, and to protect ourselves from various mosquitoes, flies, and sometimes various snakes, and different clothes are available just to protect ourselves. So if we know this, then we don't use them just to attract others, just to show off. And on the other hand, the most importantly, just to cover the private parts. So these are the proper way of using clothes. So we need to understand why are we using clothes and what are the benefits. And then if we give proper value to that use, then we may not So that way of proper use of cloth might not arouse various defilements. So otherwise, we might, whenever we are wearing a very expensive clothing, so probably we might look down another person, another poor person, say. On the other hand, if we don't have enough money, if we are simply using a very frugal kind of a clothing, then probably we might even be jealous of someone else. But if we know for what real purpose we are using clothing, then there won't be such issues, because the purpose being served, purpose being satisfied, and that is the covering of the private parts and being protected from cold, heat, and mosquitoes, flies, serpents, and these are the proper use. And similarly, Buddha talks about why are we using food? Is it just to gratify our desires? Or is it for the proper means? Is it for the proper use? So in the Dhamma it is mentioned, Patisankha yonaso pindapatam patisevati nevadavaya namadaya namandanaya navibhusanaya yavadeva imassa khayasa titiya yapanaya. So likewise, that's a little long reflection is mentioned. Typically, monks are requested to do this reflection when they are having their meals during their pindapata. So they are requested to reflect like this, because then the unarisen defilements may not arise, and the arisen defilements may fade away, because then and there he will understand what is the proper use, for what real purpose that I am using this pindapata, for what real purpose I am using this food. So it is not to beautify myself, it is simply to overcome the sort of hunger, and again as a benefit for the brahmacharya, as a benefit to practice, to my practice, and just to protect the body, just to maintain it. So these are the proper use. So if we know this proper use, then we can use food without any problem. Because if we don't know these real reasons, then we'll be in a sort of a perversion. There we may try to show others that I am using this and that, and ultimately we end up with various diseases as well. Then as human beings, we need dwelling places, houses, and even Buddha mentioned whenever you are using a temple, a kuti, whatever a dwelling place, we should know what is the real reason for using them. And they are also very much similar to the clothing. We are using those dwelling places, houses, to protect ourselves from heat, cold, wind, and from the sun, rain, and again, maybe to even meditate. So we need to have a kind of a protected, fairly covered place for meditation. And we may be using the dwelling place, our house, our home, our room, for this purpose as well. So if we know this proper use, then there is no possibility of arising various defilements. We may not think that my house is better than another person's house. My house is a two-story house, another person's house is just a single-story. So thinking like that, there's a possibility of conceit to arise. But if we know the real reasons for using a house, then we can understand, so I am using the house for these particular reasons, and all these reasons are well satisfied, so you can be contented, you can be happy. Otherwise, you will be always thinking of enlarging your house, enhancing your house, and building another house, buying another house. Various kind of desires may arise because you are not satisfied with the present house. So these are quite common among ourselves. And therefore, Buddha recommends, whenever you use the house, whenever you use a kuti, whenever you use any kind of a dwelling place, reflect, why are we using it? And The fourth item is that medicinal requisites, various medicines. So whenever we get sick, we may need certain assistance from medicine. And there also we have to reflect and then use. So Buddha recommends it is when it is necessary to use medicine, but there also we have to reflect why are we using. And again, it is recommended to maintain the body healthy. So therefore, we can have various types of medicine to maintain its good health, and that is all right. But when we properly use it, then there is no possibility of arising influxes. But on the other hand, if we are not properly using, if we are misusing, if we are using it with various other agendas, then we'll be in sort of developing various defilements, encouraging influxes. So this is number third strategy, Patisevana Pahatabha, Buddha explains. And number four is, in a way, the patience, endurance. Adivasana Pahatabha. So as you know, we can't sort of satisfy everything. Sometimes we have to bear the situation. Say for example, nowadays the corona pandemic is spreading. So we simply have to bear it for some time. There may be various uncomfortable situation. You may have to maintain the distance, social distancing. You may have to wear face mask. And the typical behavior might be little disturbed. But we have to bear it. We have to endure it. Because it is beyond our control. I mean, government and various other institutions, they are trying their best. But we as human beings, we have to bear these kind of situations. So therefore, Buddha explains this Adivasana Pahatabha with various aspects on which times that we have to be careful or we have to be patient, because certain external conditions are not favorable. External conditions are little disturbing, and at that time, if there is no way of overcoming that, controlling that, then simple way is to simply endure it. So therefore Buddha mentions that one might have to bear cold, one might have to bear heat. During the summer you have to bear heat, during the winter you might have to bear cold, and again sometimes we have to bear hunger, thirst, and sometimes suppose you are in an aranya, if you are in a forest, you have to bear mosquitoes, gadflies, wind, sun, rain, snakes, and these are all different natural obstacles we may come across, and sometimes we have to bear. If you have a mosquito net, that's fine, but if you don't, then certainly you have to bear it. Certainly you have to be patient with it. And sometimes people are sort of blaming, sometimes they are not welcoming us, and sometimes they are hinting, using bad speech, and we might get hurt. So if we immediately try to react, if we are going to attack, then we may be aggravating the situation. But on the other hand, if we are somewhat bearing the situation, somewhat sort of being patient at that situation, thinking that the other person is not in a good mood, or thinking that he is reacting with wrong information, he hasn't realized the truth, or he may be in a bad mood, or he is in a bad situation. So likewise, you can think from the other person's point of view, and we can be patient. So similarly, in day-to-day activities, you may come across various situations that to deal with various other people. So we can't simply expect everyone to respect us, everyone to accept all what we say. But sometimes people simply deny what we say, simply refuse to obey our instructions. So at that time, rather than getting angry, rather than going to argue, so are we able to maintain some amount of patience? So this is something important, And this is also mentioned under the cover, under the Adivasana Pahatamba. Suppose if you're going to argue, suppose if you're going to constantly react, then again anger is arising in your mind. Resentment may arise. You might going to revenge, take the revenge. So all these unnecessary defilements are arising because we couldn't maintain patience at that time. Even in your meditation, say you may be meditating for a fair long time, but still sometimes there is no result. But you have to carefully, patiently endure the situation. So the results might not happen immediately. So we have to be somewhat patient in order to continue the path. Otherwise it is very difficult. Therefore Buddha has mentioned Khanti Paramang Tapoti Dikkha. Patience is the most important austerity. Without that, it is quite difficult to continue the spiritual path. So if we are impatient, if we want everything instantly, then we will be in a difficult situation, especially in the spiritual path. Nowadays, due to this consumerization, people are expecting instant results, quick results. They want quick enlightenment. So, but such thing is not possible in the spiritual path. So like a little plant growing slowly with time, so this mind also will take fair amount of time to grow. So we simply have to take care of it. We have to continue our practice. So as a result of our continuous practice, slowly, slowly, mind may grow. But if we expect quick results, if we are quite impatient, so then we are in big trouble. Because then we get frustrated, mind further get agitated, mind get become restless. So these all unnecessary defilements going to arise simply because we don't have patience. So therefore Buddha giving more emphasis on patience, Buddha mentions here in Adivasana Pahatamba, one has to be patient in various situations. Then there may be various bodily painful feelings. Suppose you are going through certain disease, then there may be a certain uncomfortable feeling in your body. So you simply have to bear it. You probably may have seen the doctor, you may be taking medicine, but still there may be still certain amount of pain. We may have to bear it. And there may be sort of these pains, Buddha further emphasized, they may be very sharp, very piercing kind of pains, and even quite distressing and even sort of threatening life. That kind of very painful situations, painful feelings may be available. And suppose we did our best on certain amount, we have to be patient. So this patient endurance, therefore, is quite important aspect Buddha is mentioned in this sutta, and he is mentioning different strategies in this sutta. So we so far have discussed dasana pahatabba, overcoming defilements or overcoming taints by proper seeing, and then number two, by restraining sangvara pahatabba, and by using wisely. We as human beings, we can't live without food, live without clothing, live without a shelter, and we can't live without medicine, and we have to use them properly with wise reflection. And that is the third strategy, and then by endurance and by patience. So at various difficult situations we have to be patient, otherwise we are getting into more and more difficulties, more and more agitation, and we may start to quarrel with others, and that will actually turn the situation to an opposite side. Then there are a lot of possibilities of arising more and more defilements. We get more frustrated because we simply don't have patience. So with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. So far we have covered four techniques, four methods mentioned in this sutta. So if you have any question to ask, so I'll open up this session for questions. carry on, please.
Okay. One of the questions that I received is, dear Bhante, when it comes to getting rid of fetters and chains, we have heard that the self-identity view, or Sakaya Diti, is a place where we should be focusing on as mindfulness practitioners. We have also heard the simile that when a bundle of ropes floating on water, if we raise and pull one strand of rope out of water, the whole bundle comes out. If we pull Sakkaditti out using the mindfulness practice, several of the fetters can be eradicated, if not all. Is this correct? And much merits if you can shed some light on this assumption.
Yeah, actually, Sakkaditti is one of the most important fetter that we need to tackle. So, in certain sutta, one deity actually come and meet the Buddha, and he says that we need to do the best to eradicate tanha, craving. But Buddha little correct that statement, telling that we have to do our best to eradicate sakkaya ditti. So he is giving prominence to sakkaya ditti, the eradicating or uprooting of sakkaya ditti. So as you have mentioned, so it will actually helps to see the other defilements. So more and more defilements are arising because of the self-view. We think that this body is me. We think that this body is I. This body belongs to me. All these knowledge, all these titles, all these designations are representing me. All these skills, all these creations are me. Or all these different qualities in the mind, maybe anger, maybe lust, maybe loving kindness, maybe compassion, all these are me. All these belongs to me. All these represent I. So this is I am seeing, I am hearing, I am tasting, I am smelling, or I am being conscious, and all everywhere for our experience we are attributing this I. So this is something in a way very much inherent to the way of thinking. So therefore that may be the reason that Buddha has mentioned this Dasana Pahatabba as the first method, because we have to give some emphasis for this uprooting of Sakkaya Ditti. So one important thing is, we are typically living in a conceptual world. We have various languages, we have various communication techniques, and different designations, titles, names, grammar, and all these words, sentences, grammar, and all these things are using for mere communication, for easy communication, to discuss on various matters. But ultimately, these means and techniques we take for granted, and we think they are really real. Say, for example, when we say a river is flowing, so then we indicate the river as a noun and the flowing as the verb, and we sort of end up with kind of a view that there is a river. So simply there is a river, so we take it as a noun. There is something called river. But if you go a little deeper, you will understand it is simply the flowing that we have given a particular name as a river. So similarly, if we reflect to ourselves, this body is actually consisting of various components and various processes, but we give a name as so and so. We are giving a name, and we are giving even proper names, and different way we are trying to identify, and we think such person, such I is existing. So there's a big relationship between the way of thinking, how we are going to handle the language, the communication. So all these languages, communication, perceptions, everything actually contributes to strengthen this defilement, strengthen this personality view. But if we properly come back to ourselves using mindfulness practice, so we are not encouraging thinking, but rather we are encouraging sort of direct experience. Say for example, if we are doing walking meditation, so we are not thinking, we are not supposed to think there, rather we simply have to give prominence for direct experience. So say your left leg is touching the ground. So at that time there's a sensation, so we need to recognize that sensation. We are not thinking about that sensation, rather we directly focus our attention to that place and we recognize this direct experience. So this kind of a practice, more and more we use, give a different perspective to the life. Because typically we live in a dream world on which we have various concepts, we have various names, various designations, various conventional truth, and we get trapped there. But we simply give prominence to the direct experience, as I mentioned as an example in walking meditation. So these simple techniques slowly give us a different way of perspective. Different perspective is available for us. So to observe what is really going on, how are we creating an I? Where are we going to create an I? When are we going to create an I? It is not that there is an existing I and we are simply experiencing it. Rather, we are fabricating an I. Say for example, you are seeing a photograph. And immediately at that time, you are searching for you. So this is me. This is 10 years before me. This is I. You are even showing another person. Okay, can you see? This is me. So likewise, we are then and there, we are making a self. We are creating a self. And ultimately what happens is, we are trying to maintain this perceived self. We are trying to maintain this fabricated self. This is quite difficult because there is no such real self, but we are trying to maintain that unavailable self. So therefore we'll be in a big struggle because another person is also trying to maintain his self and I am also trying to maintain myself. So likewise, all are trying to maintain their different self, which are all sort of illusion, and we'll be in trouble. But on the other hand, in the mindfulness practice, the attention is drawn within. So we are asked to observe what is really happening inside the body. How are we maintaining our postures? How various feelings are arising? How various thoughts are arising? How various states of the mind are arising? So more and more we are going to a kind of an observing attitude, rather than trying to reacting attitude, rather than trying to simply blindly reacting to various internal influxes. We are now step back and looking the situation. Like you are watching a river flowing, now we are watching like a third person, what is really going on, how the mind is reacting, how the mind is making an I, how the mind is trying to possess something, how then the I is trying to come up, how the I is trying to show off. So likewise, this I making, mind making, can be observed by mindfulness. So therefore, mindfulness actually helps to unentangle this problem. Because this entangled mind, confused mind, actually promote the self-view. But on the other hand, if the mind is fairly clear, if mind has some clarity, if the thoughts have some distance, then it is quite easy to understand how a thought is arising, how that thought is triggering a self-view, how in a particular situation that you are trying to create an I, in a particular situation you are trying to sort of possess something, how that actually relates with the self-view. So likewise, you are now sort of a unentangling. You are now sort of solving the problem. Rather than strengthening self-view, you are now trying to figure out how this self-view is fabricated then and there on various experiences. How this, because of our ignorance, how are we creating an I? How are we making a self? So this information is quite important to eradicate Sakkayaditti. So this is where Buddha mentions the importance of the wise reflection, the proper way of thinking, rather than simply staying at the surface, thinking superficial way. We need to go to the bottom, we need to go to the source, we have to go to the direct experience, then only this kind of an unentangled situation is possible.
Thank you, Bhante. Another question that I received, why is it sometimes, even with mindfulness and yoniso manasikara, it seems certain thoughts disappear, but some continue and can continue for a long duration? Please help explain the cause of this and how we can let go of thoughts and attain peace of mind.
Yeah, you can't immediately do that. So in particular in Vipassana meditation, we sometimes call the first stage is Papancha Samanaya, where we have to, as much as possible, calm down the proliferation. And we as human beings are fond of proliferation. We like to think. So if you don't have big thing to or any kind of important task to do, you simply take a chair and simply relax and then you start thinking. So ultimately, this wrong way of thinking leads to more and more confusion, more and more kind of an obsession, and you get mentally sick actually. But on the other hand, as Vipassana practitioners, if we are trying to recognize the consequences of this way of thinking, this obsessive thinking, then we have to calm down ourselves. So that is the one major benefit of mindfulness practice. We are trying to be mindful about the bodily postures. We are trying to be mindful about various bodily activities, various bodily processes. So that actually takes our attention. So as a result, we are not strengthening that obsessive thinking. So this, the first step therefore is to minimize this obsessive thinking, which is quite harmful, as I explained just now. So this harmful way of thinking is the main cause for more and more wrong view, michaditti. But on the other hand, if we are able to reduce thinking, if we are trying to pay attention to direct experience, maybe bodily experiences, maybe feelings, and even the observing the mind helps us to calm down thinking, reduce thinking, reduce obsessive thinking. So this is in a way the first stage. And if we are able to reduce unnecessary thinking, obsessive thinking, then your mindfulness has improved. As a result, you may be able to recognize the thought processes. Previously, we are in a big story. Now the story has shortened. Now you are able to recognize very much like a sentence level. There are various sentences popping up, kind of a thought process popping up. And after that, another thought process popping up. After that, another thought process popping up. So now you are somewhat clearly recognizing these thought processes. And as a result, you are in a better position to either to drop it or either to encourage it. Suppose this kind of a thought process you recognize is related to some sort of a resentment. So if you are thinking in that direction, you get more and more confused, more and more agitated, and more defilements going to arise. So if you know that, then you can simply discard that. Now you basically, that thought process now fades away. Mind become calm, mind become peaceful. After a while, another thought process arise. So likewise, you are now somewhat in a better position to understand the mechanism of thinking. And more you do that, the mind becomes more and more quiet, more and more peaceful, and less obsessive thinking. And at that time, you will be in a position to recognize the thought arising at its very inception, at its very beginning. That's a kind of a peaceful state of mind. In that peaceful state of mind, okay, now just a sprout of thought, just a beginning of a thought, just the inception of the thought, you'll be in a better position to understand. So if you are able to understand at the very inception, then that defilement may not grow, because we have to strengthen any defilement, any thought process, for that to become stronger. Otherwise, by itself, it doesn't have any energy. We are the ones actually promoting them. We are the ones strengthening them. But if we are not strengthening, simply if we are being mindful about that process, so that very attention, that very awareness is quite enough for that thought process to fade away. This is actually the developed mindfulness, where your mindfulness is fairly strong. Simple awareness, simple being aware that there's a kind of a thought process is arising, is quite enough for that thought process to fade away if you are not encouraging it. So likewise, we are being able to slowly handle this thinking, various defilements, various thought processes, obsessive thinking. So the beginning is actually to find out some way of paying attention to a wholesome object, like say walking meditation, sitting meditation, keeping your attention on the body. So likewise, different techniques are possible in mindfulness practices, so that we can at least minimize that obsessive thinking.
Thank you, Bente. I believe that is all of the questions that I received today. Any last calls from any of the participants? You can either raise your hand or you can send it via chat, or I can also unmute you and you may ask the question directly. Kumudini, did you have a question?
Yes, I would like to know where I can find the Bhante's directions, you know, on this chart and everything. Is there any printout of it that I can get hold of?
Yeah, actually I am going to upload this to Nisarnavane website. So if you go to the Nisarnavane website, there is a section called English Dhamma Talks. So there, this sutta teaching is available, and I have already uploaded the previous version of this document. I have a little updated it with today's information, and I will upload this version as well to the website. Then you can download from there.
Thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah.
I provided a link directly to the website as well, in case you did not receive that message earlier.
No, I did not. Where link? Where can I find it? And link to this.
Link via chat. Do you see the chat box?
Okay, let me see. Yes. Chat box. No, there's a sign in.
If you can give me your email, I can email you directly as well.
Okay, so I'll put it here. Type it in here.
Sure, you can type it and I can grab it from there as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Ananda, did you have a question as well? I saw you are unmuted.
Yeah, actually, I have a question, Bhante. Now, when you say sabbasava, asava are basically the anusaya or latent tendencies. But when we talk about the third item, patisevana bhata, by using wisely, and we are just talking about prerequisites. So, you know, when you're talking about adivasana or, endurance, So we are just talking about cold, heat, hunger, and things like that.
Yes.
So it's kind of a mismatch, you know, when you say asava, we thought that, you know, very latent energies, which is very difficult to surface, but we are not talking about those things here in these items. So I just want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah. So basically, now say for example, so when are we these latent tendencies get strengthened? So this is something we need to think. And suppose there is a kind of a habit in ourselves. So we have a habit to eat kind of a food, a kind of a particular type of a food. So this is a kind of a trend we have. This is my taste. This is my selection. This is my choice. So these choices are ultimately become our habits, and that become fairly ingrained in our mind. So if we are whenever we are using the food with proper reflection, with wise reflection, such habitual tendencies may not get the chance to strengthen, because it is not just because merely triggered by that habit I am eating, but because of hunger I am eating. I am just eating to maintain the body. So likewise, we know the proper use, proper purpose of using the food. So rather than simply habitually eating, rather than simply habitually selecting a particular food, choosing a particular food. So this is where Buddha mentioned, now whenever we use any kind of a requisite, if we are using certain cloth, suppose you have various clothes available, why are you selecting a particular color? Why are you selecting a particular shape, a particular style? So that is because the inherent sort of a defilements, inherent sort of a program we have in our mind. So our mind has a kind of a framework. So only the items which is satisfying that framework is satisfying us. Only the items which is satisfying that framework is making us happy. So that framework we need to recognize. So this is the deeper part of this sutta, where when are we going to strengthen that framework? When are we going to strengthen that pattern of thinking? So that is where when we use the items, when we are using a house, when we are using our clothing, when we are using medicine, when we are using food. So whatever the different ways in day-to-day activities we are using many different requisites, we may be contributing to strengthen the defilements. We may be contributing to the arising of defilements. So if we use the wise reflection, padisevana pahatabba, we are basically covering that. We are basically stopping that contribution. We are stopping that triggering part which can come from these requisites. And therefore, there is no possibility of arising the new defilements. We are not strengthening the latent tendencies. We are basically avoiding the, or covering, prohibiting the availability of defilements by proper reflection. And similarly, use patisevana pahadabba, and again the endurance. Suppose we all have kind of a reactive possibility. Say if you see a serpent, there may be a quick reaction coming to the mind to kill the serpent, to kill the snake. And if we can recognize that, then we can simply, if it is not going to harm us, we can simply let it go. But if we simply couldn't recognize that, if we quickly react, and quickly take a weapon or stick or whatever it is and kill the animal, then we are promoting the internal tendency. That is the patiga anusaya we are promoting. But if we are being patient, we are not promoting that. We are not triggering that. We are not strengthening that. So this is in a way, through our behavior, there's a big portion that how we are strengthening the defilements. But if we simply properly behave, if we restrain ourselves, if we wisely reflect when we are using various requisites, then we are in a way blocking that path, that avenue, which could contribute to the arising of defilements. Hope I am clear with
actually,
this.
thank you,
Yes.
Bhante. Thank you
Yeah.
so much. Actually, you know, it's kind of bringing a new
Yes.
vision to our practice. Yeah, it
Yes.
is true, I think. So we have never thought of those little things probably up to now, I think. Yeah, that's good. Thank you so much.
Yeah, welcome.
Okay, Bhante, I believe that is the last of the questions for today.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay, then. Okay, then. Thank you very much for the participation, and Jennifer for hosting the session. And we can now conclude the session by sharing merits using the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddhika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu sasanang. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddhika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu desanang. Akasattha ca bhummattha deva naga mahiddhika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkhantu mamparang. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.